Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about collected editions from the galaxy's greatest comic, 2000 AD. I'm Eamon Clarke. I'm in the East Putney Tavern, second time this year, with Julius Howe.
Hello, listeners.
Julius, welcome back. This is your third appearance
the
podcast.
Yeah. And I think that the two appearances that I've had have been some of the biggest listenerships, is that the term?
This is true.
Yeah.
Yes, you're a very popular guest. I get a lot of downloads when you're on the show.
Yeah.
Episode 8, where we first did the ABC Warriors, which was an incredibly noisy pub.
Yeah.
I'm surprised people, you know,
could actually listen to that.
Yes.
I've never been able to.
No, but anyway, so yes, you are very popular because, you know, we're all fascinated by your insights.
I think a lot of my enemies like to download it and listen to see what I've been up to.
Right, okay.
Since I blocked them online.
Okay, so before we get into today's book, which is a big hefty volume, I don't think you'd be surprised to hear that we're sticking with the ABC Warriors, but we'll get to it in a moment. Obviously, this episode will come out in January, but we're still dealing with the shock of the news about Carlos Esquerra.
Yeah.
You know, who was literally one of the cornerstones of 2000 AD.
Yeah, definitely.
And still producing amazing artwork right the way up until, you know, his final illness.
Yeah. And that's completely true. You just got to look at the last few covers he did for 2000 AD for the coverage of Sniper Elite. They're up there with the best of his work. And to still be at that age, still have done so much, and kind of you could really rest on your laurels at that point.
Yes.
And he chose not to. Every day he would work. He'd get up and he'd go, oh, I've got a deadline. I'd chat to him online. He'd go, I've got a deadline today. I've got to get this done. I've got that done. I go, just can't you just relax? Like, why not to do fewer stories? He's like, no, I've got to work every single day, and I've got these commissions to do, and these, and it was just, it's amazing. He really loved doing the work, and he really loved sort of pleasing the fans and getting stuff out there for them to see.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, as you say, right away up, he was just so good at deadlines. He was always producing work. The quality was great. Mm. I had got in touch with him, I can't remember when, August or September, about doing this Johnny Alpha commission, the two Johnny Alphas. So that pin-up he'd done of an early design from Star-Lord, mm-hmm. when he was all slightly more, you know, had slightly more going on in his uniform and the weird Electronux, and having that compared to how he draws Johnny Alpha now.
Yeah.
And
a bit like the poster he did for the 40th with the two
exactly,
dreads.
Yeah. It was exactly that. That was the idea. It was the two dreads, but this time it was the two alphas.
Yeah.
And I didn't know he was going into hospital, you know, I didn't know anything about that. I was still thinking that we were going to see him at the Birmingham convention with John. But, you know, the process of getting a commission from Carlos was amazing because he was so... It wasn't one of these ones where the artist disappears for months and months, you don't hear anything. He was like, you know, a week or so later you'd have the prelims.
Yeah.
And then he'd say, is this okay? And I'd say yes. And then he sent it to me, and it must have been literally the week before he went into hospital that he finished it. But what amazing dedication. As you say, he was just working all the time, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I think there was one commission left that he never finished, which he was working on just before he went into hospital, and I helped the owner actually get that. And it's a beautiful... he was going to recreate the first page of the Apocalypse War.
Right.
What he was going to do, in his old style. And I have a few sort of modern flourishes to it. Kind of to make it as a cover, I think, rather than as a page. And that looks amazing, but unfortunately the arm goes down. It's all in white, never got shaded or anything, so it's just it's very sad.
So it is a very sad loss for 2000 AD and for all of us. Now we know that the forum raised a lot of money, I think over £4,000 to give to his widow, which was tremendous. Obviously, there's an archive of stuff of his art, his sketches, his prelims that the family have. And am I right in thinking that you were, or you're still involved in some way?
Yeah, so I was helping the family sell some of the artwork.
Yeah.
And they were finding a little bit, because there were obviously lots of people interested, they found it a little bit overwhelming.
Yes.
So they said, I'll just hold back for a bit and we'll think about how to sort of go forward selling the art that they've got. Because... while there's a lot of the art that they want to keep and they really love, there is quite a lot of art there, and they also recognise the fact that a lot of fans do actually like owning this, yes, as a kind of a part of the comic. And I've been a big collector of his work for about since I really started back into collecting comic up 8 years ago or so. So I've got quite a lot of Ascaro art myself. And because I've sort of built up that relationship with him and I was helping him sell his artwork, mainly by sort of, because I understand who's interested in things, because I know how much things will be based on the sort of the history behind the page, the characters that appear. It's quite difficult to value art because, yes, unless it goes onto an open market and then it goes onto eBay and then people bid against each other. And I mean, even then, it's a price can be completely changed by the fact that just two people want it, and it will just throw something up to a huge amount. But being able to understand how the market is, what things are selling, what characters are cool, that kind of thing, I can give them some advice about that kind of stuff. So I was helping along those lines. And then after he passed, obviously, I helped out with them sort of dealing with that. And also there were a few people that had already paid for things, getting those things to the right people and yes, kind of helping with that.
Yes.
But hopefully going forward, we'll continue to sell some of that art as well.
Right, okay.
But I mean, this book features, I think, the last work he did with Pat Mills.
Right,
so
okay.
It's,
yeah, we'll talk about his artwork in here in a moment as well.
And
yeah,
if people are interested, he still has a lot of the art from his ABC Warriors story.
Well, Carlos Ascaro, ABC Warriors.
It's really
art.
Difficult to get my head around the fact that he's not around anymore.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Can people still get in touch with you as a sort of way of getting to talking to the
family? Best way to do it is through the Art of Carlos Ascaro Facebook page.
Right.
Because then I can keep an eye on everything.
Okay.
If you're not a member of that, join that page. It's a great page. I post up sort of when I get pictures of original art and things, I put that on there. And other people can post pages that they've got, and we can kind of talk about them, which is great.
Okay.
But if you're not, like, email me or something. If you're not on Facebook or something,
okay,
I can help out.
So that's the Art of Carlos Ascaro Facebook page. I'll put a link in the show notes for this episode. Have a look at it there; you'll find it. If you don't do Facebook and you want to get in touch with Julius, you can contact me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. Okay. I mean, as we say, it's a sad thing, but at the same time, so many of his fans love his work, and, you know, to own a piece of that is just fantastic.
Yeah.
I've got the two commissions from him, and I've got, I think, one Judge Dredd page of his that I own, and it's, you know, fantastic. Yeah. They're never leaving my collection, you know. The kids have got the red dots on them.
Well, the art is amazing, and a lot of 2000D art is brilliant.
Yeah.
A lot of it is, especially when there's not computers involved in it, and so the art you see is the art that you get. And the ABC Warrior stuff he did in this was all kind of, there wasn't, with some of the Judge Dredd stuff, he did a lot of computer work afterwards, but I think with most of this, I've seen a few pages and they look like the pages that are actually printed, which is always great when you see,
yeah,
that. But just actually sort of holding the page is like, wow, this,
yeah,
is,
it is,
yeah, I remember this is,
they are wow moments, yeah, aren't they, yeah. Okay, well, let's turn to this volume. This big, heavy hardback we've both got a copy of in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
We're sticking with the ABC Warriors, but this time we've gone to Mech Files 3.
Yeah, following Mech Files 2.
Yes, exactly.
Strangely.
The success of Mech Files 2 last time. So we're working away here. So obviously all written by Pat Mills.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of artists.
Ah, well.
Well, okay. Yes, we'll perhaps get to that in a moment. Kev Walker, Henry Flint, Mick McMahon, Carlos, we've mentioned. Liam McCormack Sharp, he's credited as, but I think he's now better known as Liam Sharp.
Yep.
Who is doing, he's done Wonder Woman, he's now doing The Green Lantern for DC with, uh-huh, Grant Morrison, I believe.
Yep.
So he's huge now. And Boo Cook, which I think is the first time Boo Cook's name has come up on the podcast, that we've actually had, okay, some of his art to look at. It's all black and white.
It is.
It's
a move from the last one, which was all colour, wasn't it? All painted.
So last time we were all painted Kev Walker.
Yeah.
We had two stories. And it's about a 4-year gap, I think, from that volume to 1999, 2000.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Up to 2006, I believe. Prog numbers are in the sort of 1234, but right the way up to 1485. Obviously, there's gaps in there. Mm-hmm. But so there'd been a gap of 4 years with the ABC Warriors.
Yeah.
I suppose we should probably mention that the editors, Tharg at the time, was a combination of Dave Bishop and Andy Diggle.
Yeah, when this started off, it was...
Yeah. And I was wondering whether the shift to black and white from the fully painted Kev Walker... Because obviously there's this thing for editorial of budgets. How yeah. much can you spend on a strip?
Yeah.
And we know, obviously, black and white's cheaper.
Yeah.
And I wondered whether that might be some of it. But also, some of the stuff that you found out, you were researching, is it Andy Diggle trying to go back to the good old fashion days of the original ABC Warriors?
Well, I'm not sure, because the Roadhouse story was in, I think, Prog 2000, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I think that was just edited by Bishop, was it, or was that when Diggle started by that point?
It was probably Dave Bishop, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think so. Certainly, Diggle's... involvement is in The Third Element.
Yes, but which is the second story in this volume.
I think part of Roadkill being in black and white was because Kev Walker had moved to black and white right. by that point. After ABC Warriors, he didn't really paint anything.
Didn't he? Right. Okay.
No, he would computer colour stuff.
Yeah.
Which I'm not a big fan of his computer coloured art, but I love his black and white art. I think it's amazing.
Mm.
And the amount of detail that he put in was clearly driving him mad, because then he changed to his more simplified style.
Right.
Which, I say it was simplified, it was... it's probably still very difficult to do, but it doesn't involve all of that obsessive cross-hatching that his black and white art was kind of known for.
Right.
So I think this was the last story he drew in his old style.
Oh, right, okay. That's the Roadhouse story that starts this book.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
As a side note, I was looking at someone's comic art collection this week, and they had one of the pages from the Roadhouse in there.
Really?
Yeah, and it was just absolutely stunning to see.
Was it?
The amount of detail was just... It was just beautiful. And they're really small. They're not... Bisley pages are absolutely huge, and this was just like a normal-sized page.
I mean, I saw somebody posting a Bisley page and comparison to some other artwork on Facebook today, I think.
Yeah.
And saying, you know, Bisley artwork is huge.
Yeah.
And Kev Walker's is quite small and concentrated yeah. and very detailed.
Yeah.
Lots of cross-hatching. Yeah. Okay, I mean, we're not going to go into the sort of full details of the stories in this book, but I mean, just to give a brief summary, it's basically the ABC Warriors back on Mars, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
take them back to... Let's go back to the 80s.
Yes, yeah. Go back to Mars. They'll face a variety of threats. They'll face a variety of threats...
as they are facing here.
Yes, that's right.
With the Hoover and the music.
And they will be, you know, they'll be defeated, they'll be infected, they'll come back, they'll reappear, various old characters will reappear. Mongrel's interesting because this is the Mongrel intelligent phase, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where he starts speaking in perfect sentences and with coherence and so on, as opposed to his normal...
It's an interesting move, really.
Yes.
And you get, obviously, the death of Morrigan. Spoiler. Should we do spoiler?
Well, I think we can say that. So the Morrigan, who, you know, we talked about last time, this new character, this female robot member of the ABC Warriors for a while... It doesn't take too long before they decide to just get rid of her in this volume, do they?
No, it's quite... Yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, with the... with the Pat Mills novelisation of this, which I'm sure we'll come to at some point, I think he changes the order of the stories, so that the Third Element part, the first part is before the Roadhouse, and so Morrigan doesn't actually appear in the Roadhouse in his...
Right.
In his reordered version.
Okay.
Should we talk about the actual volume?
Go on then, tell us.
It was a big, hefty, hardback, £25 book.
Yes.
And it's the reproduction's actually really good in this book, apart from one page in Liam Sharp's story, I think it's the first one he's got, where for some strange reason the final page of it is really pixelated, and I'm not sure whether it was originally printed like that. That's this page here.
Yes, I've got this one here as well. So it's the last page of the Liam Sharp story, which is the Clone Cowboys, isn't it? So
yeah, from, it's like Prog's, they've used a really low res
1237 1239. Let's have a look at Prog 1239, because the last page of that looks a bit strange, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the lettering's fine, so you can read it, but you think at some point someone would have said, hang on, this is a bit,
I think we need
to get a rescan of this.
Yeah.
If the scan was damaged in some way.
The first panel is very blurry, and there's a big main panel, which is a bit weird looking as well, isn't it?
Yeah. It kind of looks like they've used a really low res scan of it.
Yeah.
Like a preview scan rather than a final scan.
Okay.
So apart from that, the volume is nice.
It's a big, hefty volume. It looks lovely.
It does really annoy me when you have little, in a £25 book, when you have little mistakes like that. That really drives me mad.
Yeah.
But what can you do? You can't.
So, shall we talk about the artwork first, or shall we get to editorial interference?
Let's talk about the art. Let's start positive.
Start with the good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got lots...
This will kind of lead into the editorial interference anyway, because
there's
a host of artists involved, which is not necessarily what Pat Mills wanted, as far as I understand from reading interviews. Now, I should add a disclaimer at the start that we're going to talk about Pat Mills and Andy Diggle, and that they butted heads in their relationship.
Yeah.
As far as I understand, in Pat Mills' book, he said they sorted everything out. Andy wrote him a nice letter, and as far as he's concerned, it's in the past.
Yes.
But I don't mind dragging out the past.
So. Okay, well, we'll get
like
to that.
Like a drama.
And let's start with two of the old guard, because before we get to Carlos, we've got a Mick McMahon story.
Yep.
And this is... Let me just get the page up in front of me. So this is the tripod story. Of course it is the tripods, yes.
Yeah.
Because it does involve actual Martian tripods as well. So this must have been the early 2000s, when Mick is getting quite stylized in a way in his work, isn't he?
I think he's gone through this kind of... this. Incredibly stylized and sort of phase, and he's bringing a lot more detail back to things at this point. I think personally I know it's a love-hate relationship a lot of the time with mixed with modern art, but I think this is amazing, the art in here. The storytelling is perfect, the balance of black and white is amazing throughout the story, and there are some panels that you think, wow, that's just like, there's a giant head on that character and the tiny little arms.
Yes.
It still works. It's
Mick, isn't it?
Yeah.
He makes these things work.
It has that kind of that style. I know I once saw a folder of original prelims for this story. And it was mind-blowing, the amount of detail he put into it. Basically, he drew every single page as an individual. He had like an A5 ring binder it was in.
Right.
About 60 pages in the ring binder. And he'd drawn every single page as an individual page. Then he'd drawn 2 pages on one page, 3 pages on one page, like the whole episode on one page. And in the end, he drew every single page in the story as tiny little thumbnails on a single page. And he'd drawn them all so you could see the division of black and white in the pages, so that if you looked at them all together, it would still look nice.
Right.
And you just think, this is completely unnecessary, and yet this is his process of how he really wanted to nail that, the design element of each of those pages, and how they sat together as a whole.
Oh, right, fascinating.
It is.
Yeah.
But slightly... slightly mad.
But you're, I mean,
at the same time,
again, you're in the fortunate position of having seen, you know, original artwork for a lot of this stuff, which is, and as you say, the wow moment of seeing it, holding it, and then also comparing what's printed.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the reproduction on the Mick pages is great. It's very sharp. Carlos does the Shadow Warriors book one.
Yep.
So here's Carlos doing the ABC Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not what you'd call typical Carlos style in a way. He's changed it for the ABC Warriors, hasn't
Definitely,
he?
Definitely, yeah. Well, he didn't sign it LJ Silver this time.
No, that's right. No, he used to back in the original
ones.
Cheered
Pat up a bit. But,
yeah.
He's definitely using a kind of a rougher style for this. It kind of feeds into the fact that they're robots. That there's a lot more black involved.
Yes, isn't there? Yeah.
Probably because he knew it wasn't going to be in colour.
Right.
He had to put a lot more shading and balance in there.
Yes. I mean, it is very dark, and for some reason, the word that came to my mind was almost oily.
Yeah.
To do with robots. Yeah. You know, and black blood and Hammerstein's face. I'm looking at in deep shadow.
Yeah. He didn't do that much stuff in black and white. There was the Roadhouse he did, the Strontium Dog story.
Right.
A few other sort of one-offs and things, but it was quite rare for Collis to work in black and white post him going to computer.
Right.
I think because they pay you more if you do it in colour.
Yeah.
So you might as well colour your own work.
Yeah. Well, that old thing about Dave Gibbons doing the lettering, because it means you get the extra check.
Exactly,
Yeah.
We often forget that it's people's job as well as them producing something beautiful for us to
fawn
over.
Yes. I mean, I don't think I've ever told this one on the podcast, but at the Lakes Festival, the first one I went to, and I had the great pleasure of buying Carlos and John a pint.
Okay.
And Carlos, one of the things he said to us in the pub, we were sitting with a group of fans, was he said, you guys have paid my mortgage all these years, basically.
Yeah, well,
which again was just Carlos, wasn't it? He knew that people, were buying this stuff, paying for this stuff, who were interested in his stories, his storytelling, and of course his original artwork.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's Mick, there's Carlos, and then we get quite a bit, obviously, of Henry Flint in this volume.
Yeah.
Black and white and grey tone Henry Flint.
Yeah.
And
I think that based on the sort of interviews I read with Pat Mills, despite the fact that he was happy with the other artist's work, I think he wanted Henry Flint to draw the whole thing.
Did he?
Because he was a bit annoyed that Henry Flint went off to draw a Shikara. Partway through the book, he was apparently offered it by Andy Diggle to go and do your own strip, and Pat Mills was like, he's working on my strip, why have you sent him off to do something else?
Oh, then that's interesting, because actually, as we record, my episode with Shikara has just come out last Sunday.
Yeah.
But I mean, we've spoken about this before on the podcast. Pat has this sort of strong relationship with his artist.
Yeah.
He likes to, in a way, to have some sort of creative control over who the artist is, and then, as you say, he sort of wants the artist to do the run,
yeah,
to do that story,
exactly,
to stick with that artist.
And I think part of that is that Pat is quite commercially minded. He doesn't just see the story, he sees it when it's collected in book volume, how it's going to sell then. If it's got a single artist, you can market it a lot better,
right,
than a sort of the mixture of artists that you get in. I know that it doesn't apply to the original run of ABC Warriors where they did that. And I seem to remember he was quite annoyed about the original run changing artist anyway.
Right.
Because he wanted kind of one consistent artist throughout that as well. But the way Steve McManus was kind of dealing with it, it meant that he just kind of gave it to lots of different artists. And in fact, that stopped Pat writing ABC Warriors after that first series, because he really didn't like the way editorial were dealing with it.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Which is interesting that they did exactly the same thing with this series, and then he got annoyed about it again.
Right, okay. Repeating the mistakes of the past.
Exactly.
There's quite a lot of Henry Flint, but Pat would have preferred probably the whole lot being Henry Flint in a way, perhaps.
Perhaps, yeah. Now, personally, I think this period of Henry Flint is not my favourite.
Right.
It's when he switches to using computer. I've seen some of the original art to it, and some of it is kind of penciled and then inked on tracing paper. And he's experimenting with new styles, and I think that basically what he did with Nemesis and Deadlock was so time consuming because he wanted it to be beautiful.
Yes.
That following that, he realised that the commercial reality is, if I don't produce a certain number of pages, if I don't make my style more repeatable, as kind of faster, basically, then I'm not going to be able to do this as a job. I have to get another job or something. So then he just abandon my whole life. So you can see in this, he's using a lot more computer. He is the inking is not as detailed as in Nemesis,
yeah,
which for me is just absolutely amazing.
Pete Flint.
Absolutely, but his style that he's got now, he's achieved that. He can get that great balance between the detail and the speed that he needs. And so I think his art that he's doing now is still amazing as well.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, we always love Henry Flint when he comes up on the podcast. I'm a great one for repeating anecdotes, but it's almost the Ron Smith alarm clock thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you've got this long to do a page, the bell rings, move on to the next one.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because as we say, this is a commercial. Obviously, it's a business. For
and they're
them.
Not paid that much for the great stuff they do.
No. And there's no pension plan.
No pension plan, no.
Apart from your original artwork,
exactly.
If you can get it back from. Yeah.
Exactly. And if you're doing it partially on computer, that's going to affect your original art resales.
Yeah.
If you're doing it completely on computer, then you've got nothing.
Yeah. It's a mind-boggling experience in a way, being a freelancer, an artist or a writer or a letterer or any of the colourists and so on.
Brings you to a point, actually. With around this period, you see Pat Mills goes from not writing that much for 2000 AD to writing a huge amount for both 2000 AD and the magazine.
Right.
And I think that's partially because when Bishop was editor, he only wanted Slane from Pat Mills.
Right.
And then... don't believe Pat Mills ever worked for the magazine whilst Bishop was editor. Once Andy Diggle comes in, I think it's a new relationship for Pat. And although it turns sour, a lot of stuff, I think, starts sort of moving on and getting commissioned. Having read a few interviews, I know that Requiem was pitched in 2000 and rejected by Andy Diggle.
Right.
Which has gone on to be a huge success for
Pat
Mills.
Huge European success.
Yep. And I know that he also pitched a second book of Deadlock, which was rejected as well, I believe.
Right.
So, and which would have been amazing to see that continue into its own series, but Andy was quite focused on wanting ABC Warriors back and for it to be old school, return to kind of old, what he believed as old style 2008.
Okay, so
we can go back to the artists if you want.
I'll pause to say Requiem Vampire Night could have been a 2000 AD strip then.
Could have been, yeah.
Right.
I don't know that it would have been as good because I don't think the relationship with editorial that Pat has or has ever had is as good as what he's got on Requiem, because he can basically do whatever he wants, it seems. Because it is quite extreme, a lot of Requiem, that you wouldn't really have seen in 2000 AD.
Right.
And it also has because they're in books, it has a lot of time to develop. Which I think in a 2000 East series, and I think we'll see that in this Mech Files, the stories seem to be quite trimmed. I don't know to what extent editorial has a hand in that.
Okay, well let's get into, because there are some slight controversies about, let's say, the Third Element story.
Yeah, yeah. Which, and I think just to give an overview of in my opinion, of how I saw this book, I thought A Third Element was the worst ABC Warriors story I've ever read.
Right.
And I thought Shadow Warriors was brilliant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. So
so I think that does have an impact, because I didn't know about the editorial stuff when I read it.
Yes.
And at the same time, I thought lots of this stuff just doesn't make any sense in the story. It's like there are huge chunks of the story just missing.
Okay. So... this story has been told in Thrill Power Overload. And it's been told in Be Pure, Be Vigilant.
It's touched on, yeah.
Yeah.
And then lots of interviews around the time. There was a lot of... Basically what happened was, for people who don't know, 2000 AD in the late 90s, it was going through a bit of a dip.
Difficult times.
Yeah. There'd been a push to... When the movie came out, there was a real push from the owners to kind of make 2000 AD sell more.
Yep.
But the misguided techniques they had, like making it incredibly sexist and having these sort of novelty stories appear all the time, like Blair One and Space Girls, and
yes.
A Life Less Ordinary adaptation. And it was just, as a reader, it was dire. It was at a real low point.
Yeah,
and there were some things that were changing that were quite good. John Wagner was back writing Judge Dredd, which was a great thing, and there were some good artists that were around at the time that were kind of rarely used. It was quite strange what they were doing. I think they're trying to kind of... There'd been a period in 2000s history of trying to foster new talent, which hadn't worked out that well because people like Grant Morrison and Mark Miller didn't really fit the style of 2000 AD, I don't feel, or understand or like 2000 AD. I don't think it's unfair to say that. They've said since they didn't really like the comic anyway.
Yeah.
But they went then on straight on to great success in America.
Big things, yes. Yeah.
And then there were same with a lot of artists, because of 2000's pay scale, once they got popular, they just go to America now.
Right.
So it was kind of in a funny period, really, in that it was terrible and losing sales. And then Andy Diggle came in as assistant editor, and he and Dave Bishop tried to push back against that,
right.
And Andy Diggle had a new idea to take the comic kind of back to its roots and make it. He wrote this this kind of mission statement, which he sent to everybody and said, "This is what 2000 AD is."
Yes,
and everyone said, "Oh, that's great." He's an engaged editor, and Pat Mills said, "Don't tell me what to write." I think the difference in attitudes, which you can expect from Pat Mills, because you know, I think he knows what he wants to write,
right?
Basically, and so there was a big change in 2000 around that time, which was pushed towards shorter, high action, sci-fi stroke sort of action sci-fi stories, a movement away from. And this was a continuation of the movement away from intelligent stories, I feel, because Dave Bishop's quite famous for saying, when he came in as editor, "I don't want smart stories. Don't give me that smart rubbish." And that's why he got rid of people like Peter Hogan and eventually Keck W and people like that, because he didn't want those smart writers coming in and trying to do anything more than just like a big fight, basically. And so Diggle's approach was kind of a continuation of that, making it more sort of action-based and sci-fi based. And yeah.
And so Andy Diggle wants to take the ABC Warriors back to Mars.
Yep.
He almost wants the original Seven back, which I wonder is why the Morrigan gets dispatched fairly rapidly.
Yeah. And then who comes in?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And as you say, he wants shorter, punchier stories like the originals.
Yeah.
And I suppose the particularly controversial one is. The Third Element,
yeah,
which features a group of human soldiers called the Biohazard Troopers. Mm-hmm. And this is where we know that some of Pat's dialogue was rewritten.
Yeah, yeah.
And Thrill Power Overload, Andy Diggle says, if he'd had more time, and in retrospect, he would have asked Pat to rewrite it.
Well, I think perhaps if you look at the relationship, if you write a mission statement and you already get some pushback from a writer,
yeah,
you're the editor, he felt it was his... It was within his remit to rewrite Pat's dialogue.
Yeah.
And there's two ways to look at that. First way is to say, well, you're the editor, you are responsible for what goes out. If you're not happy with it, rewrite it, put it out. The other way is... You're insulting an artist by changing their work.
Yes.
Which is the way Pat has taken it.
Yeah.
And the other way is the way Andy Diggle originally thought about it, but then when he thought about it later, he said, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't have,
yes,
have done that.
In retrospect, he thought he probably shouldn't have done that. And as you say, he's apologised, and it's all fine now with him and Uncle Pat. Interestingly, some of the dialogue had been... I think Pat had got some of the dialogue from his friend and co-writer, Alan Mitchell.
Yeah, and I don't know to what extent... Alan Mitchell actually wrote that dialogue, or whether they like chatted on the phone or something, because Alan Mitchell's not credited as a co-writer.
No.
So, and maybe Pat should ask him for a handwriting, convincing black dialogue, because that's what he wanted. They're black characters, and he wanted something that would kind of speak in that voice.
Yes.
And that was the dialogue that Andy Diggle didn't feel was appropriate and rewrote. Now, when I read the book, I didn't know about this. I remember reading the characters and thinking, this doesn't sound like Pat Mills. This,
right.
Or what I actually thought was, this is lazy writing for Pat Mills, because usually his dialogue's actually interesting and quite informative, and this was like your worst generic movie dialogue, and I just thought, this is rubbish, what is he doing with this story, is terrible. And then when I found out later that this dialogue had been rewritten, suddenly made sense.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying the original dialogue was amazing either, because Pat Mills' original dialogue actually appears in a book that he wrote with Alan Mitchell, which is called
The Medusa War.
The Medusa War.
And it's available on the Kindle.
Yeah.
So it's one of the several 2018 novels that you can find on the Kindle.
And one of the few that's actually written by one of the original creators.
Yeah. So it's credited to Pat Mills and Alan Mitchell.
Yeah.
Alan Mitchell, we know that I think Pat Mills met him in a comic shop where Alan was working, and he worked with him on Third World War for Crisis. Yeah. And he co-wrote the sort of prose novel, text novel, The Medusa War, which you can get. It's only $4.99 on the Kindle. So if you want to see what Pat's original dialogue, or, you know, a closer version to would have looked like, then you can find it. And we were looking at some of the samples beforehand.
Yeah. I think it's better, personally.
Yep.
I'm not sure what your thoughts were.
I thought they were both a little bit dodgy, actually.
It is quite funny in places.
Yeah.
Whether that's intentional or not, I'm not sure. Yeah, but again, I think you've got to go with what the artist wants.
Yes.
I'm very much in favour of that. Having said that, if I was an editor, I don't know, I might feel differently about things.
Right, yeah. There is a rap song in the prose novel.
There is.
Which I'm sure came from Alan. The problem with... I really hope
that Pat's not writing rap songs.
I know.
It always embarrasses me when white older men start to rapping.
I mean, the only place for rap is with a rap musician.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Because even when it's written down, it looks... strange.
It's pretty bad,
and hokey. Yeah. Anyway, okay. Well, let's not dwell on that too much. So obviously, there were some controversies. Andy Diggle rewrote some of the dialogue. He since, in Thrill Power Overload, as we say, said he regrets that and thinks he probably shouldn't have done it if he'd had more time, or you know.
But of course, the impact of that is, it feels like the whole story is affected by it.
Right.
Because you can tell that Pat is. It kind of feels like Pat doesn't care about the story after a while, and he just wants to get it over with and get on to the next story, because there are lots of parts of this story where things just happen and are just not explained.
Right.
And I don't know whether that's been chopped down from editorial. I know Pat has complained in interviews about the fact that a lot of scenes were told to be cut. Things like he wanted the ABC Warriors to have press conferences after missions.
Yes.
And they felt that kind of intelligent style of writing, where it's not all action, was not appropriate for 2008 anymore. So, and I don't agree with that. I think Pat's a great writer, and I think a lot of the stuff that people disagree with, even now, him doing, I still think is really good.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm biased in that way.
There are some odd things that happen, and I know that it's referred to by Pat in his book, that, you know, characters seem to be destroyed and then a couple of pages later they're back again.
Yeah.
And just functioning as normal.
Yeah.
And it does feel like bits of missing.
Yeah,
you know.
Definitely does. And I know that the book expands on a lot of elements of the story. I don't know whether those... it's probably the case that he wrote the book because he pitched a lot of this stuff anyway.
Yeah.
And he had it there. And because it was cut out, he just thought, I'll make a book out of it.
Yeah.
And get some more money from all the work I've put in anyway.
Right.
Because there was a relationship between the president's wife and Joe Pineapples.
Yes.
That is just alluded to right at the end, but apparently it's quite a big thing in the book. And this is the novelisation of the story. And then you've got lots of things that kind of, they're just, like the virus affecting them, and then suddenly they're all fine at the end.
Yes,
It just feels like someone's gone... just an editor has said, can you cut this out? And rather than rewriting it, I've just cut it and said, there you go, I've done what you said. Feels like that to me.
Okay. It's an interesting time for 2008.
It is an interesting time, but it led to a lot. It went through a bad period.
Yes.
And it got a lot better when Rebellion took over and
it found
really
safe harbour with Rebellion, thank goodness.
It did, yeah. And I think Pat's writing with Rebellion has been a lot better. Having said that, I think Shadow Warriors is Much better.
Right.
Especially the first book.
Yes, which is Carlos, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's my favourite. I really like that book.
Oh, strangely enough, that's the one I'm going to pick as well, actually.
Yeah. Because I think it loses a bit when Henry Flint comes back in.
Right.
And I'm not sure why that is. I think the writing in that first Shadow Warriors book, I don't know whether it was to demonstrate that, like, now that Andy's not involved, so I don't think Andy Dugger was editor then, I'm not 100% sure, but I can write, you may have a go at my writing, I can write really well, and that's kind of...
Here we are.
That is a book. There's so many great ideas in there, so many, like, just things that are just alluded to, and not kind of pulled back, but just really build and make the story a great story.
Yeah, it felt more like ABC Warriors to me. I mean, maybe it was the Carlos art, but it felt like ABC Warriors again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good.
Okay. We've also got Boo Cook in here. So let's get back to the art for a moment. So Boo Cook, this must be reasonably early Boo Cook for 2008, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's not the sort of fabulous painted, almost... dare I say bubblegum sort of stuff that he does now for the magazine and the prog.
Horrible is the term I'd use. I know that a lot of people love Boo Cook's art, and I think some things he does are amazing, but that the colours that he uses really drive me mad.
Right. But here he is in black and white. Has any of that, have you seen any of that, the original art?
No, I've not seen. I used to collect David C. Warrior's art, so I had pages from I think everyone except Boo Cook.
Right.
I've never been a huge fan of Boo Cook. It's not an artist I collect. I can understand what he does. People really like, and I think he's very talented. But there's kind of a squashedness, almost graffiti sort of element to his art that kind of all those artists like Jason Brashill I can't remember any others, but they kind of came around that time, and they had a kind of graffiti sort of element to the art, which didn't really gel with me. I was never really a graffiti kind of person.
Okay.
And then well, you've got Liam Sharp in there as well.
Yes.
Whose, I think, art is terrible in there as well. It starts off really well, although it looks like there are a few semi-Bisley swipes. And then suddenly he looks like he's gone, I've got to get this finished by tomorrow, and he's just drawn the rest of it in a marker.
Right.
It's quite alarming how it kind of falls to pieces towards the end.
Yeah, yes, the last few pages are a bit weird, actually, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it is early Liam Sharp. I mean...
He'd been going for... He was in the 80s in 2008. He did PJ Maybe.
Well, yes, I mean, we've had him on doing PJ Maybe, and again, on that, his artwork on that, I found, you know, it's not what it is now, is it?
He is amazing now.
Yes, he is astonishing.
And he can draw in many different styles. He's a very talented artist, and he'd obviously done stuff for Marvel UK, Death's Head 2. He'd done a lot of sort of UK, US comics.
Yeah.
But, and then he went on to create his own digital comics company and things like that. He's done a lot of stuff, but his art is very detailed. And he's very arty in that sometimes he'll draw a massive page, like as big as a wall,
right?
And then he might draw a page that's really small. It just kind of depends on... It's a bit like Clint Langley, how the page appears in their head. They then have to do it in that way. But no, I think he's a fantastic artist, but I don't think this is his best day here.
I do like when he picks out the individual ABC Warriors, they give them, like, their page each, in a way.
Yeah, some of the stuff is lovely.
It's quite Bisley as well, from the Black Hole, wasn't it? You know,
I like the little preacher appearance that comes in there when Jesse Custer appears as one of the undead.
Oh, right.
Yeah, which is... it's somewhere in there, yeah.
Somewhere in there, okay.
That's fun.
But, probably in there somewhere. Okay.
Still... And I think they're good stories.
Yes, there he is. Yeah, I found him. Found him. Yes, there he is. Jesse Custer from Preacher on one of the Liam Sharp pages. Yeah.
And I think that Pat Mills is very focused in these stories and the individual elements, apart from the end of Medusa, was great. But it really does feel like he's just given up on the story by the end of it.
Right.
It's like, let's get this wrapped up and over with.
So if you want to read an expanded version of perhaps what the Medusa War was supposed to be like in Pat's head...
I am actually quite. If I had a device, a Kindle or something, I would actually read that book.
Would you?
Because I just really want to know what the missing bits are and whether they're in the book.
Right. Okay. You've mentioned that, you know, the Shadow Warriors with Carlos art is probably your favourite in the book, in this particular volume. And it certainly was my favourite as well. So some of this artwork you've seen, have you owned some of it at some point?
No, I haven't owned any of it. But
right.
I've talked to Carlos about for years about his art, and he sent me pictures of pretty much most of the stuff that he's got pages of.
Yes, you were showing me some digital images of character prelims that he'd done.
Yeah, so he sent me some prelims for two of the characters that he created, one of whom was... Let's have a look.
So there's the character with the tricorn hat, and I forget who that is, but
so it's Bootleg and dog face?
Yeah, something like that, yes.
Dog tag.
Right. Bootleg is there, yes, there's Bootleg.
Bootleg
is the sort of faceless robot.
The term that we later understand means...
And then dog tag, here he is.
Bootleg means bastard in robot terms.
Oh, does it?
Yeah,
right.
So it's explained later in the story.
Illegitimate, yes.
Yeah. Two of which are great characters as well. And you can share the... I'll give you the digital copies and you can share the designs with listeners on the webpage, but... You'll see that how dog tag changes from being like a robot dog,
yes,
to a more human face.
Yeah,
and then when Henry Flint takes over, he draws a robot dog.
That's been a dog again. Yeah. Yes, yeah,
which is a bit jarring, really.
So here we are, some little early character sketches and designs by Carlos. Fantastic again to see them, and for you to sort of, you know, because you were, as you say, you spoke to Carlos very often, and he would share this stuff with you over.
Yeah,
the internet digitally and so on.
Yeah, I talk to him every day, really. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, not just lost a great artist, lost a great friend.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, let's then...
While we're here, I've just got to say, I know that we like to go back and point out Donald Trump as being any president that appears in things.
Yes.
But that looks like a lot like Donald Trump. In the Carlos president looks a lot like Trump.
There's a thing about depictions of Earth or American presidents in 2000 AD that we now look back on them and we all say, yep, Trump. It's amazing how he's become shorthand for some sort of bloated, corrupt president.
Well, okay, he is responsible for everything that's wrong with the world, isn't he?
Oh, yes, absolutely, yes, yeah. Okay, cool. So... The other thing, of course, is the Grail Page game. So you haven't actually owned any of this art.
Oh, yeah. I had a few pages of the Henry Flint.
Oh, did you? Right.
Yeah. I had that one. I'll send you. I think I've still got some pics of the pages.
So that's a great deadlock page.
And that was drawn in pencil and then inked on tracing paper, I think.
Right.
Let's have a look. And also have that mongrel page as well.
And you had a mongrel page?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Which was nice as well.
Okay, so if we gave you all the artwork to choose from now as a Grail Page game, what would you pick?
I'd probably pick that Kev Walker page that I saw the other day, which was... It's the second page of Roadhouse, where all of the team are together.
Oh, yes, there they are, right. Second page of the volume, in fact. The ABC Warriors in Roadkill, second page, and there are all the ABC Warriors looking... suitably battle-worn, but also great. So that'd be your Grail page?
That would be in this, yeah.
Because of, you know, the time it is, I've chosen a Carlos page.
I could see you would. They're beautiful, beautiful pages.
And I've actually chosen a page of Mongrel smashing up a robot tank.
Yeah.
And it's got the Carlos in it. It's got the movement, the action, the dynamism. It's a great image of Mongrel. I quite like the next page where the little figures are sort of running across.
That's one of the great things I love about this story is they run everywhere.
Yes.
And it's like it's 10 clicks away, it'll take us 20 minutes. It's semi-mundane, the dialogue they have between each other. But it's also really funny in that this is how robots communicate with each other rather than them kind of being like action heroes. They're kind of how you would kind of imagine robots to have a conversation.
Yeah,
I think that's brilliant writing. And I think there's also something funny about with the lettering as well, where when there's that silence machine and their bubble, their speech bubbles get smaller and smaller.
Yes,
I think those kind of things are really funny that you put in there. It's just very inventive, and there's loads of great ideas in there. One of the things I wasn't so sure about was when Morrigan dies, we get a nice picture of her bum.
Yes, we get that strange...
It's a bit odd.
We get that strange bum and boobs pose that only female superheroes and
robots. R.I.P. TNA in ABC Warriors is kind of what it is, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, well, it is comic books, and, you know, there is a certain...
There is a certain market, isn't there?
Yeah.
But no, I think that overall, I think it's actually a great book, really. Despite a few issues, the first story suffered towards the end. I still think that overall, it's a rebirth for the ABC Warriors. It's kind of a reboot in many ways. I'm still not quite sure how this ties into the Chronicles of Chaos, because all of the sort of chaos elements that were in there are now gone. Not referred to anymore.
Yeah, no, chaos magic, because that was one of the things I think Andy Diggle said. You didn't want the chaos.
You didn't want
magic.
The magic, yeah. Well, I really liked that. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
So it must be difficult being an artist, being a writer, and having those ideas, and then an editor come along and say, look, if you want to get paid, you've got to do it. You've got to do it our way.
I want the action stories. I want robots hitting things again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like I say, there was clearly something happened, because Pat Mills, he rebooted Savage. He was writing this. He made Black Sidder for the magazine. Blood of Satanus again came back in the magazine. And, of course, Slain carried on. Still no Finn. I love Finn, but hopefully one day it will come back.
Right.
But he really did. He started writing loads for 2008 at this point, which was great if you're a reader, because Pat's stuff is... I think it's great, yeah.
Yeah. We like the prog when Uncle Pat is involved.
Yeah.
And of course, we loved the prog when Carlos was involved, and sadly, there'll be no more.
No more of those, no. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of parts drawn of his last story.
Right.
Spectre. But I don't know whether they're going to release those. They might do.
No, I haven't heard anything, but I mean, I presume there'll be some sort of memorial edition or something of that. I don't know. Okay, so the Mech Files Volume 3, as you said, it's £25. It's £5 off in Forbidden Planet at the moment.
Ooh.
If you're near a Forbidden Planet, try and get it there. £5 cheaper. And who knows, we might be carrying on with the ABC Warriors. We'll see what we're talking about this time.
Oh, I hope so, because I've not read the Vulcan Wars before.
Oh, right.
It was in a period where this was actually a period I stopped reading in 2008. I read the first Roadhouse in Prog 2000.
Right.
But quite soon after that, I stopped reading. And so this was all new to me. So I didn't really know what to expect when I came to it. That's why I was, when I started reading that first set of dialogue, I was a bit, it's going to be terrible. But the story was actually great, and the art was great throughout as well.
Okay. It gets better.
The story certainly gets better.
The story gets better. Yeah. And the
art, I think, remains consistently good throughout. Although, having said that, the Liam Sharp stuff's in the first half is now, I don't know. It was all good. It's all good.
Okay, and I'll post our Grail pages and also some of the images that of Carlos' prelims and sketches that you've shared with me. I'll post them on the Facebook group and on the forum, hopefully. Julius, thank you very much. Thanks for doing ABC Warriors again.
That's okay.
We're journeying through them.
Yeah.
We probably should have gone back and done the Magnificent Seven, but anyway.
We did that, didn't we?
We did Black Hole.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's because I would have done the first one, but that book was terrible. Maybe we can do like a special edition where we look at the first two Titan books.
Okay.
We could do that.
So, what's happening with your collection and collecting at the moment? Are you still... Because last time you were offloading a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I'm still, because I'm not working at the moment. I'm trying to get the stand-up comedy. Did I mention I do stand-up comedy?
You do, yes.
If you like stand-up comedy, come and see me do stand-up comedy. Generally in London, although I do travel around the country every now and again. But, yeah, so as that's been going on, where I've needed to buy things like software and editing tools and things, I've had to sell a couple of pages and try and sort of get a bit of money coming in.
Right.
Yeah. But that's the way of the world, isn't it?
It is, yes. Sadly, it is the way of the world.
It is.
And anything else happening in the world of Julius at the moment? You're still appearing on Everything Comes Back to 2000 AD?
Yeah, when they'll have me.
When they'll have you, right.
They haven't banned me yet.
Okay.
It's great because I'm the most reasonable one.
Yes.
It's the first time it's ever been like that for me. I've started running a monthly comedy show.
Oh, right.
Near Waterloo, which had two... done it twice now, got like 45 people in the last time, so it's kind of building up, actually getting an audience. And I've managed to get like pro comedians to come along and do bits as well. So I think in February Dave Whitney should be coming down, he's a very good comic. And then it's in January, and in February Clinton Baptiste from Phoenix Nights said he's going to come down.
Oh, right.
And do some stuff. So
where is that?
It's just between Waterloo and Lambeth North Station, so it's like a 5-minute walk from Waterloo Station.
Right.
So, and that's called The Big Comedy Show, and you can find it online under Foxglove Assassins Present Big Comedy Show.
Foxglove Assassins Present The Big Comedy Show.
Yeah, which is me and my mate Kieran, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
So look for that. This will be out in January, so in February, look out for that. And,
yeah.
Okay.
Come and see Clinton Baptiste, he's brilliant.
Right.
You should pay like 10, 15 quid. It's free.
It's a free comedy night?
Free comedy night, yeah.
Fantastic.
That's the idea. I'm all about the giving it back to the people.
Excellent.
I'm like the Corbyn of comedy.
Yes, you are.
Got a beard as well.
Yeah, yeah, and the reasonable one on Everything Comes Back to 2000 AD as well. Thank you very much, Julius. It's been great fun to talk about 2000 AD and the artwork and various bits and pieces that we've done. And hopefully, you know, we'll continue the journey sometime next year again.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening to Megacity Book Club. As ever, email me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com, Twitter @mcbcpodcast, Facebook @megacitybookclub, and you can find all the links at megacitybookclub.com. And that'll do us. So until next time, when we're passing judgment on another 2000 AD book, from here in the East Putney Tavern with a pint, it's goodbye from me and...
Bye-bye.
Bye.